Hello everyone and welcome back to the Cycling Dane Extra channel. Today we are doing a recap race analysis of Paris-Nice Stage 3 team time trial, but a very different team time trial to a normal one. As always, I'm joined by Mr. Gregor himself, Ewan Wilson. And Ewan, what happened on this amazing variation of team time trialing?
Well, today was Stage 3 of Paris-Nice 2023, which was a 30 or so kilometer long time trial around the small town of Dampierre-en-Bourly, which is known for its power plant. But today, Paris-Nice came to town. And it was an extra special team time trial, not only because it's the first sort of team time trial we've had in Paris-Nice for over a generation now, but because of a new rule that was implemented by ASO to spice up the discipline of team time trialing. Yes, this now means that the first rider over the line will stop the clock for the team. This replaces the old rule where the fourth or fifth rider over the line would stop the clock for the team, so there was an incentive for the collective to ride together as a group all the way to the line. Instead, while this sort of inspired sprint lead out trains, riders attacking in the final kilometer, and all sorts in what was a very exciting stage of Paris-Nice, and one that we were all kind of watching with a very steady eye.
It was quite an electric one. We saw Jaco Ayala really put the hammer down and really set the benchmark early on. One of the fastest intermediate time check, 59 kilometers an hour average here, and really a phenomenal team effort from them. And we haven't said who won, but I think everyone knows who won this one.
Yeah, exactly. No points for guessing who the winner was. It was a certain Jumbo Visma, who have dominated team time trials whilst they've been happening over the past couple of years. Yes, the COVID break sort of got rid of team time trialing once teams became more fragile, more prone to sort of last minute abandonments, which does make team time trialing quite difficult if your team gets wiped out for COVID reasons. Imagine if we had a team time trial in the middle of last year's Tour de France after half of UAE were ruled out from COVID. So it was interesting to see it come back and Jumbo Visma prove once again that they are the kings of team time trialing, even in this unorthodox manner. They were strong. They rode together all the way to the line. They were one of the few teams to have sort of a coherent group still together on the line. It was Jonas Vingegaard, Nathan van Hooijdonk, and Jan Tratnik who rolled over the line together. So definitely Jumbo Visma putting themselves in the driving seat for GC, but they don't have the jersey, funnily enough. That goes to Magnus Cort, who sprinted away from his EF team to stop the clock and take the yellow jersey by just 1 second ahead of Nathan van Hooijdonk of Jumbo.
There was no crashes on the course, but very close to Stephen Williams crashing into his former team, Bahrain Victorious. Ewan, I don't know what you think about this new format. I am super against it. Strange format, but yeah.
Riders slowing down, riders coming through. It always happens in team time trialing, but it feels like it was amplified here because it was more intense, like a big old lead out train for 30 kilometers time. It did make it exciting this time. I mean, I will preface this by saying that I detest team time trialing. I think it's the worst sort of format of racing we have in road cycling. But I think it did add something today, maybe from just a novelty and intrigue perspective, because we've never seen this before. We were intrigued to see how it would play out, and teams didn't really know what was going to happen, and they all played it slightly different. So that made it interesting watching. Maybe if this format carries on for the next 2 years, I'll be in a position to say it's boring again in 2 years' time. But today, yeah, it was interesting, and it did keep us intrigued on how teams are going to approach this, because, I mean, every team did approach it very differently. Jumbo Visma and UAE were like night and day, their differences on the course. And some teams, yeah, going for like a long lead out train when one sole rider going away in the final kilometer. Some teams stayed together all the way to the line. Bora and Astana looked like they were racing a team time trial from 2015 still. They had about five guys over the line together, whereas UAE, who we'll talk about in a bit, Pogacar was the only rider there. He attacked away from Miguel Biao in the final kilometer to go in his own all the way to the line, and it actually worked quite well for them.
Yeah, it was kind of like you're launching this rocket, and it just, as you see, the rockets just splinter into the final space shuttle, and that was kind of what was happening here with the team time trial teams like UAE. Their strongest rider, Tadej Pogačar, kind of, it's strange in a way, but but one team I think we should talk about as well. We've spoken about Jumbo Visma, just imperious. Their team was just incredible because they had Jonas Vingegaard, they had Eduardo Affini, they had Tobias Foss, they had Rohan Dennis, like all just time trialing engines in there. But yeah, Quickstep Soudal, or Soudal Quickstep, shall I say, former world champions, multiple world champions in this discipline, not quite hitting the mark here. And we'll speak about Ineos as well.
Yeah, they also won at UAE a couple weeks back in the team time trial there. So it was a bit of a surprise to see them crumble here. But I mean, it didn't really go particularly well from the gun. Kasper Asgreen peeling back in the first couple kilometers. There was sort of chaos unfolding there, which made us a little bit skeptical of what the time was going to be like. And I think, yeah, this team weren't really in it for the victory from the get-go. But for me, I'm more flabbergasted by the result of Ineos Grenadiers, who lost 48 seconds today. They're a team that have always done well in time trialing, and you would think on paper, this squad could have probably got a top five, but 48 seconds is quite a big loss. And if you factor in Dani Martinez and his GC battle into this, 48 seconds, that's a lot of riding against Pogacar and Vingegaard. Ineos could have had the chance to put in time on Pogacar today, but they're actually behind him by quite some margin.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go into the GC gaps because it's quite fascinating, but sticking with Ineos, you've got Josh Tarling, the the junior world champion in the time trial discipline. You've got Connor Swift, strong engine, Ben Swift, strong engine, both of them dropped almost simultaneously at one point. Pavel Sivakov, yeah, okay, maybe not, but he's climber as we know, but it's not,
he's a good time trialist though. He's a top 10 grand tour time trialist.
It's not like we're looking at Israel Premier Tech here. It's like you top five, I think, yeah, as you said, that should be like a minimum for them.
Yeah, and looking at like Trek got a better time than them. Trek, I don't think we're really ready for this. Matthias Gjellem also, yes, going for GC, but that's not a team time trialing squad. Even sort of UAE, that's, you'd say Ineos are a better team on paper for the team time trials. It is interesting to see, and it's not just losing time to Vingegaard and Pogacar that he's lost. He's also lost time to Bora Hansgrohe, Maxi Schachmann over there, to David Godu of Groupama Française des Jeux, to Simon Yates of Jacob Al-Ula. There's plenty of characters he's lost time to.
Yeah, and a huge chunk. I mean, Dani Martinez, good rider, but that's a lot of time to make up on a mountain.
It is, particularly when they're not huge mountains. No offense to the Alp Maritime. But it's not quite the sort of Alpe d'Huez, Mont Ventoux, where yes, you could say, well, Martinez could gain a minute there. I'm not quite so sure on the sort of the finish up to La Loge in a couple of days. Big time gaps there. I'm not expecting it. He might try to go long on the stage that finishes on the Promenade des Anglais, the final stage. I could see him performing well there. He performed well last year, if you recall. So maybe he can gain some time back there. But there are plenty of other GC narratives to be said about this team time trial.
Ewan, we saw Pogacar gaining time on one of the other stages, expending a bit of energy. But now Jonas Vingegaard is ahead of him. How did this Jonas Vingegaard-Tadej Pogacar battle? It's only 11 seconds. It's not like it's earth-shattering time, but it still is in the Jumbo-Visma camp rather than in the Pogacar camp.
Yeah, exactly. Jumbo-Visma now really with the upper hand. But yeah, as you say, only 11 seconds for Pogacar to make up. Bear in mind, he gained 12 seconds on two flat stages over the first 2 days, rather. It points to something really that Pogacar can work on. All it takes is getting some bonus second sprints, which he's proved to do very well. And he's back in the mix, even sort of winning a stage, because I think you can agree as well, if it comes down to Pogacar and Vingegaard sprinting up La Loge in a couple of days' time for the stage win, I'm sorry, Pogacar's probably going to get that.
Yeah,
he's
true.
He's always been a little bit better of a sprinter. And from what we've seen over the past couple of years, like they have come to the line together, and it usually goes to Pogacar. Always has gone to Pogacar.
Yeah, there's no what we're not here either.
Yeah, exactly. But looking at like Otacam, Col du Porte, sorry, not Otacam.
Otacam was not a good day for Pogacar.
Luzardiden, that's it.
Otacam was a good day for Vingegaard.
mixing up my infamous Indurain climbs. Luzardiden in 2021, also towards Col du Porte 2021, even after Vingegaard dropped Pogacar on Mont Ventoux, in Malocène, Pogacar still outsprinted Vingegaard to the line. There are plenty Longwy, La Planche, plenty of examples.
Yeah,
in
I was
case
thinking of La Planche because I think La Planche
that
was a good one.
Yeah, yeah. Even on the Alto Port finish, Perrelude, even there, Pogacar stronger than Vingegaard in a sprint. All it takes is some bonus seconds and he's back in it.
We've spoke about that in the preview as well. The punchy nature of Paris-Nice, it's not normally the, well, now it is more of, but we've had winners such as Carlos Betancourt on the former winners list, a more punchy rider than kind of an alpine rider. But nevertheless, talking more about GC, how do you feel about Simon Yates' chances now after that good ride by his team?
Yeah, it was a really good ride from him today, proving that they've done big sort of developments in their TTing game. And he's right in the mix. He's a guy who's performed well at Paris-Nice in the past, finished in second place in GC last year, let's not forget. And when Simon Yates is on a good day, he is on a very, very good day. We saw this at the Giro last year. When he was good, he was brilliant. But also when he's off, he's on an off day. So you can't really second guess Simon Yates. But I think he's really in for a good position to probably gain third place in GC. That position we were saying was up for grabs for Danny Martinez. If he were in the yellow jersey, as you said during our commentary live stream, I think it would have been a different scenario where he was really in a position to gain confidence. Like we saw him at the 2018 Giro, when he had the leader's jersey on his back, he was fantastic. But with this, I'm a little bit more skeptical. I think third place is more achievable for him. Just given how close Pogacar still is. Pogacar's only what? To Simon Yates, that's a, thinking about quick maths, only a 7 second gap. That's nothing. Once again, a sprint finish up a hill, the bonus seconds, boom, Yates is below Pogacar.
Yeah, that's
but then
true.
Yates, if Yates hangs on to Pogacar and Vingegaard, I think he's a faster finisher than Vingegaard.
Yeah, it's just, we have to see how good he is. But what do you make of, well, we have to mention them, EF Education News Post taking over the yellow jersey with Magnus Cort Nielsen. But winner of Etoile de Bessèges, Nelson Paulus, Ewan, he's in seventh place now. You've talked him up plenty of times, but how do you feel here in Paris-Nice? Well, after that spectacular team time trial from the team.
Yeah, I'm a big supporter of Nelson Paulus. I think he's a courageous rider. We saw that already at Paris-Nice on stage one. He attacked with, what, 30 kilometers to go, brought up Pogacar and split the group completely on his own. He's obviously very hungry for something. He's performed well this year so far. He won the Ouverture in Marseille, which is usually a curse to your name for the year, but he dispelled that myth by winning Etoile de Bessèges. And now in Paris-Nice, we're moving towards a part of the country that he's done very well in the past couple of months. Don't be surprised if we see Nielsen Paulus perform very strongly. However, I think once we get to that big summit finish at the Col de la Couillole on stage 7, I don't know about you, but I don't think he has it to really be in that top echelon of riders. But a top 10 and maybe a sort of fun stage win along the way. Yeah, Nielsen Paulus, a yellow jersey stint, why not?
Yeah, time will tell. But that's basically it for our recap race analysis. Make sure to check out our live commentaries on the Cycling Day and Extra channel. And comment down below who you think is going to win Paris-Nice. Do you think it's going to be at Tadej Pogacar show or Jonas Vingegaard or even Nielsen Paulus perhaps? But as we go from one Dane to another Dane in terms of the yellow jersey, that's it for this video. And of course, as always, thank you very much for watching and have a nice day.